No, I'm not for sale.
Welcome back to the Stampede Blue Colts Cast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for joining me here again tonight. This is our third podcast of the week. Thank you guys for all the ratings and reviews on iTunes. Thank you for all the good comments and everything else. I mean, those are fantastic, helping the show grow immensely already. Cannot thank you guys enough. Tonight, we got my man Brett Mock back on the show from Stampede Blue. What's going on, man?
Hey, Matt, glad to be on here tonight. Obviously, something really important happened today. I can't wait to talk about it with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to have you on. Let's get down to business, too. I mean, we got, what, the initial Colts death chart was released today. So, I mean, if there's anything newsy that we need to talk about, this is it. I mean, we're heading into the first preseason game of the season against the Detroit Lions. So, Of all the things that are non-stories right now, this is kind of a story, but it's more interesting just to see where the Colts are either being honest or they're trying to get a reaction out of people like us. So let's, I mean, that kind of feels like the way it is in a couple different spots here. So what was there anything that stood out to you as just blatantly wrong?
Well, so the first thing I guess that really popped out to me is when you read the depth chart, you have to pay attention to the asterisk players, right? So right. You have like Andrew Luck, and he shows up all the way, you know, at the back, which obviously isn't accurate. Gathers is there. Langford also is back there. So that potentially is going to shuffle some things up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, keeping that in mind, certainly something that's going to matter moving forward. In terms of surprises, I guess it was a little bit interesting that Philip Dorsett and Chester Rogers were listed as a quasi, they both are third receivers.
Like 2A and 2B.
Right, so that was kind of like, huh, I wonder what was the thought process that went into that, and I don't know that you can read a whole lot into that at this point. As far as I can tell, and you've actually been at the training camp practices themselves, would you think it's fair to say that Rodgers has received a lot more praise, or is that not accurate?
Oh, he's definitely gotten the praise. I mean, don't get me wrong. I even mentioned the other day that Dorsett has actually had some good practices recently, and I thought he did. I think the open practice that they had at Warren Central, I don't think he had a great day there, but and you know, and funny that was the case, because Kamar Aiken, a guy that I've kind of been, you know, talking about, is, you know, he's pushing it a little bit because he's not doing much. Apparently, that was his best practice of the year as well. You know, kind of flip flopping roles there. But I'm surprised a little bit, but I'm not so surprised because of where they've got the wide receivers up there. I mean, they've got very specific roles there. Dorsett is basically Chester Rogers' backup where he plays. And T.Y. Hilton is obviously the number one. You've got Dante Moncrief down here in the number two wide receiver position, but you've got Aiken and Tavon Smith, Bug Howard, and Chris Briggs behind him, whereas you've got Quan Bray and the new guy Marvin Bracy and JoJo Natson and Fred Brown all under these guys. So I don't think that that's necessarily even a misprint with the Dorsett Rogers being like the 2A, 2B there. I think that they, you know, naturally did that in alphabetical order. I mean, because that's the only reason I could see that Dorsett would be written in there first. You know, I just don't understand other than that. But that's the receiver role. Dorsett is basically Rogers' backup in that role, as far as I'm concerned. Because that's what he plays. When he comes in with the second team, he plays Chester Rogers' role. When it comes down to it and we get a little bit closer to you know, maybe even the third preseason game, I think this depth chart will change, you know, a little bit. But I don't think that they'll necessarily change where they've got these two as far as, like, in the same role. It'll be Rodgers and Dorsett both there because that's the role they play. When you look at, like, Moncrief, those are the big possession-type guys. Moncrief can go downfield, but Aiken, you know, Bug Howard, those guys are a specific role themselves right there. So I don't know if maybe people didn't really understand the way that they have this, because it is confusing. It can be, for sure. But when you look at these I think that's more of what they're saying, is that Dorsett and Rodgers are playing the same role in the number two there, as opposed to, or in the number three spot there, as opposed to necessarily being the you know, co two and three or three and four receiver. It's just, that's just the role that each of them are going to play when they're in the game. I think that those two are going to be in and out, to be quite honest with you. If Dorsett continues to play and play well, you know, through training camp and does a little bit of something in open practice this Thursday with the Lions, then I think that you'll see he and Rodgers kind of come in and out regularly. I think that'll be interesting and a nice dynamic for the Colts as well. So, but I mean, that definitely stood out. There's no doubt about it. We get down to the offensive line and stuff like that. Was there anything that jumped out to you at all? The first thing that caught my eye kind of was, initially anyways, was Deshaun Bond backing up Ryan Kelly at center. And then I realized that Brian Schwenke had, you know, like you said, you got to watch the asterisks, and that's actually what he's there for, because Brian Schwenke's out right now. But Redmond being the backup left guard behind Haig, I thought that was interesting, and I thought that it was kind of deserved. He's had a nice camp. And Vunovich as well, backing up left tackle. He's a guy who's going to be similar to, you know, what they had with Wrights, I think. They're thinking he's going to be the swing guy to kind of move just about everywhere except for center. But other than that, I didn't really see anything, you know, that jumped out to me as being, you know, either ridiculous or just crazy, you know. How about you?
Yeah, nothing really stands out at the offensive line. I'll tell you, one of the big things about that is, without having an opportunity to see the offensive line line up live against the defensive line from another team like we will this weekend, mm-hmm. I have a real hard time of making heads or tails of any of that anyway. Right. So, I mean, they're going to have the opportunity to show what they can do. You almost always see the second team offensive line go against the first team one defense. Every preseason, it seems like the defense stays in for a couple more reps. Mm-hmm. So I think that you'll have an opportunity to see them separate themselves. I guess it's sort of a interesting note, I suppose, is there's not very many rookie players who were given a whole lot in terms of, you know, moving up in the depth chart.
Right.
So seeing Zach Banner there, maybe if there's a storyline or potentially something of interest, it is having him there over maybe someone else. Now, granted, I get it. It's pretty bare cupboard. I'm not saying I can't believe Blake Muir isn't ahead of Zach Banner, but still, what it comes down to is you at least see him in that second spot. And I think a lot of the rookies were pushed down, maybe just because that's sort of general protocol in training camp. A lot of times rookies don't get those spots until after the game start.
Yeah, and I just don't think there's anybody that they could really put ahead of him right there at that point. I mean, I think Vunovich is ahead of him if you really look at it, and who would they put in if Clark went down? There'd be some shuffling, and I think Vunovich would go in wherever they wanted him to be quite honest with you. But Banner is going to be working there. I mean, that's going to be his role, is to be his backup, and LaRaven Clark's had a great camp so far, but, you know, Banner has some real issues, but I don't know, man. Him as a backup right now, you kind of feel like you look at those guys in the backup, and you look at those are the guys that are going to be fighting to just climb into that 53. I mean, you know, save for Deshaun Bond. But Vunovich, Redmond, Good, and Banner, those guys are all going to be climbing in there fighting for that, you know, last roster spot ultimately when it comes down to it, because they're not going to keep a backup at each and every position. They're not going to, I don't think anyways, that they would keep 10 linemen. That just would be crazy to me to have that many on the roster. But, you know, I think that three of them are kept, and I think when you look at who does what there, it kind of makes me wonder if Banner is actually quite as high as they have him. But you know, he has always been working at right tackle behind Clark. He's going to continue to, although, you know, that's just the way it goes, I suppose. But, you know, not too much there with that. I'm a little surprised that Fawn Cooper's back as far as he was. I think that they liked what they saw from him at tackle when he was in there a little bit this past week. I'm kind of surprised that he's, first of all, guard in this, because they were working him at left tackle. And, you know, that he's third on the depth chart there behind Redmond. Not so much that he's behind Redmond, just that he's the third on the depth chart behind somebody. But, you know, where are you going to put him? You know, I mean, he's definitely not a center. He's too long and lanky for that. So the fun part about all of this as far as depth chart is just looking at where they've got everybody and kind of making yourself question as to why or what the thought process is there. But, you know, moving on to the tight ends, we didn't know, you know, there's no real surprises here. They have definitely, you know, have the tight ends 1 and 2 split there. Jack Doyle is number one. Brandon Williams is the number two in that role. Henry Krieger Cobble is the third guy. I think that he kind of, they're not going to double up on depth chart here, but behind Swoop, they've got Daryl Daniels. And I just haven't seen that much from Daryl Daniels to think that he warrants being a backup. I think actually if they were to put a guy in behind Swoop there for his role, it'd be Krieger Cobble. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, that's to me, it makes a whole lot of sense what you just said. And I think that the tight end position, the number three spot in particular, is going to be one of the more interesting positions to watch because there's only so many positions to where there's going to be a great deal of value potentially of what happens in that spot when you're looking at, you know, who's going to be the ninth offensive lineman. I mean, how exciting can you really get? But nonetheless, when you look at tight end, there's wide open there. I mean, I don't think there's really anything. There's nothing that's been spoken between Williams, Daniels, and Krieger Cobble. Any of those guys could come out of this. And I'm actually somewhat intrigued about Krieger Cobble. And I actually think that he could, if it has been proven at this point, that Swope is capable as a blocker, and they don't need a third blocker or an extra blocking tight end, I could see them saying, hey, let's stick with somebody that maybe has some hands and gives us the ability as a weapon that we can flex out or do something maybe in goal line as an example, which they like to do. So it's interesting to keep an eye on what's going on there. Again, you've seen them in person. So, you know, you've talked a little bit about Williams and his abilities as a blocker. I don't know. I mean, you know, do you have thoughts on who's going to come out of that?
It's fun because the first couple days I was down there, I didn't see much out of Williams blocking or receiving. So there wasn't really, you know, a bunch that I could offer there. But the last day that I was down there, you could really see why they consider Williams to be an asset. He is very much a very strong blocker. But the thing that, you know, the other thing that stood out to me after Henry Krieger Cobble caught a couple crazy catches, you know, one-handed grabs, turning, you know, doing really nice turning and being able to adjust to the ball when it's thrown to the wrong shoulder, bad passes, go figure with this quarterback group right now. But, man, he actually did a nice job being physical. He was coming down and cracking down on John Simon a couple times. I mean, Simon's a big dude, and you're not going to hold him for long, but he certainly got John Simon's attention, and he didn't like it very much. You know what I'm saying? He did not like the fact that Krieger Cobble, because he was only a day or two into practice to begin with the team, so he hadn't really gotten to make his acquaintance yet. And that was kind of how they kind of began their friendship, if you want to call it that, because Krieger Cobble came and cracked on him pretty good coming down the line, and like I said, Simon did not appreciate it, and he got him back though. But yeah, I just think that, you know, he's not going to be a force in the blocking game, Krieger Cobble, but he is a guy who is more than willing to do it, you know, and I mean that has to be worth something as well. And Swoop, he's bigger, faster, stronger this year, more agile, smarter. You know, I mean, he's had a good camp, and I'm excited to see what he does. I think that if he puts as much effort into what he's already shown and effort into getting his body right in the offseason like he has, I think you have to assume that he's greatly improved his blocking. I just can't I mean, it's hard to assume that he's a great blocker. But from where he was, I think it's realistic to assume that he's probably made some significant strides.
Absolutely. I'd like to think that Swope's in a position potentially to have his floor, and I know this might be aggressive to say, but that's all right. His floor might be something like what Jack Doyle did last year when it comes to sort of busting out onto the scene a little bit more. I think that his ceiling, and we've talked about it before, so we could go on and on about this. His ceiling's ridiculous. Right. So I don't know. I mean, he could be a legitimate weapon He has taken huge strides over the last couple of seasons, but he definitely, to me, Doyle wasn't an exceptional blocker last year, and I don't expect that Swope will be either. But if he can be a Doyle level blocker, then they've got a legitimate two tight end set that could be pretty powerful.
Yeah, I think Swope just needs to be able to block without holding, and also to be able to, you know, win at the point of attack occasionally. That to me is a successful blocking tight end. And he'll get better as he goes. He's already, like I said, he's already grown by leaps and bounds. I mean, you've got to assume that he's going to be just as serious about improving his blocking game, because that makes him even more valuable to this team. I mean, yeah, that's going to keep him solid where he's at on the depth chart for sure. I mean, he's not going anywhere, regardless of who comes in, regardless of who they draft. He's going to be in this tight end room regardless if he's an all-around player, like I assume that he's going to be within the next year or so. You know, look at this running back group, and this is kind of funny because a lot of people were saying at the beginning, which was realistic, and I'm not trying to say that they were wrong, but Josh Ferguson was the number three back at one point, and you know, obviously Gore and Turbin are one and two, but Mack has jumped up into that number three spot with Ferguson at four, Troymaine Pope at five, which I am fully on board with, over Dalton Crossan at six. Dalton Crossan hasn't done anything in the slightest bit, as far as I'm concerned, to warrant a roster spot. I know that people were saying, oh, but, you know, Ballard was talking highly of him, or Pagano, one of the two. He was, and he's not a bad back. I'm not trying to say that he's not, or that he is, but he is not a top five on this depth chart. Even as much as I loathe Josh Ferguson and what he did last year, Dalton Crossan isn't even on his level yet. So, I mean, that's not a realistic trope. You know, I mean, that's just something that people want to say because it's what they've heard. He's right where he needs to be, Dalton Crossan. But you know, other than Frank Gore, I saw a tweet today that somebody said that they thought that Robert Turbin could out snap Frank Gore this year. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it was Evan Silva. I think that's a little, you know, a little extravagant there. Gore is going to not get the carries he had last year. I think that's a safe bet as far as I'm concerned. Robert Turbin, on the other hand, is going to have an increased role, but I don't think he's going to get, you know, 150 to 175 carries, which is what he'd have to do, in my opinion, to out-snap Frank Gore, because we got to consider Marlon Mack's role in this offense, which there will be a role for him. I'm sorry, the dude's too explosive, and he's shown too much at camp. But Turbin's been great in camp, you know what I mean? Two of these guys I've talked about a little bit. I haven't really given Turbin the credit that he is due, but it's not because he didn't earn it or that I've said otherwise. He just it's just something that, you know, simply you're trying to talk about as many guys as you can, and he's just one of the guys that kind of I've accidentally left out, to be quite honest with you. So that's my bad, but Turbin's had a fantastic camp. He's done well. I've mentioned it before. I just haven't gone in depth in any of the articles about it. But, you know, Ferguson's now at the number four, Max at number three, and I don't see that changing at all. I think that right now the battle for the roster is Ferguson and Pope.
Yeah, I think the ship sailed on Mack. Mack's definitely going to be number three. I don't see him moving from there at this point, and frankly, I'm not sure that he was ever really much of a threat to not be there, unless it just turned out that he was not what we thought he was going to be at all. But in this case, I think that you actually see a running back almost by committee. Now, I know that we hate to throw that around, and we always sort of go back to the guys who can do it all, or every down, that sort of thing. But when you look at, you know, defenses, they talk all the time about sub packages. You always talk about how, you know, well, sometimes we're going to be in the nickel. And today, Pagano mentioned we're going to be in the nickel like 65% of the time. And you talk about all these different ways that you have to respond. I think that that's what they are building with the three running backs that they have. I think Turbin is going to vulture a lot of goal line and short yardage carries, and that's going to be his primary role. I think that the Colts are comfortable with him in that role. I think Gore's probably going to get the bulk of the snaps, as you've mentioned already. So if you're in a what I would call a standard, you know, first quarter drive without any, you know, the scoreboard having real influence on what you're trying to do, Gore's probably going to be the guy. He's got the experience. He's a better blocker probably than both of those two, although I think that Turbin at least is you know, capable there as well. But then you've got Mack, who is completely different. You know, this could be your third and long back. This could be your scat back. He also is somebody who's going to come in and be change of pace right in the middle of a drive. So when it's not a short yardage situation potentially and Frank Gore just needs to get a blow, then you might see Matt come in there and it's something completely different. So I like where they are. I don't think at this point that I have a great deal of confidence that any of those last three guys are going to make the roster, because I don't know at this point that any of them are going to be legitimate options in the return game. And if they're not, I'm not sure where they belong.
And we're back here with my man Brett Mock. Just wrapping up the offense there, kind of going to jump over to the defense now. A lot of good points there on the running back situation as well that, you know, you pointed out there. I think that you make a good point that you just don't know what's going to happen with those bottom three. I think that, you know, they can find a return guy. Marlon Mack's going to offer his. There's not going to be a lot of room here. That's going to be the trick of the roster in general, is to find those guys that can contribute on the skill part of the special teams committee and try to find out, you know, if those guys can be actual position players or if they're going to have to be, you know, decent position players but have to be specialists in this regard. So that's going to be interesting to find out. As we hit over here to the defense, we got Henry Anderson at 1D end, Margus Hunt, which is more interesting than people will know, at number 2, Jostin Thomas, and then Kendall Langford with an asterisk there. I'll be honest here. This is a lot more interesting than you guys think. Kendall Langford, let's say he's healthy right now. He's in the same depth chart here with Henry Anderson and Margus Hunt, Jostin Thomas notwithstanding. I'm not so sure that Jostin Thomas offers a possibility to get onto this roster right now. He just doesn't have the what do you want to call it? I don't want to sound like the guys on TV, but the twitch. He just doesn't have that. But one of the guys that, you know, we've all talked about in the offseason once he was signed, that, oh, he's been like a career blocking dummy, basically, and a career practice squad type guy, a career third, you know, option, not doing anything, no stats. Margus Hunt is taller than Henry Anderson. He's thinner, but he's built almost identical. If they switch numbers, there's nobody to be like, no, that's Henry Anderson. Because I'm telling you, they are built so similar. Margus Hunt's just a little bit taller, but Margus Hunt is a working dude. I'm telling you, this guy has a lot of bull rush. He's strong. I was impressed with him. I mean, I don't mean impressed like starter impressed. I just mean from all of my misconceptions or my preconceived notions on him heading into camp, he impressed me. And so that's a guy to watch. I mean, he is legitimately a guy to watch as far as I'm concerned of bringing in those last couple spots on the depth chart there. But Henry Anderson, no doubt at number one. And ultimately, I would say, you know, what are they going to do with Kendall Langford here? That's kind of the interesting point or the interesting thought to kind of discuss is, you know, does Langford actually back up Henry Anderson? Or is there, or, you know, does there have to be some jostling between you know, this on this defensive line in order to get Langford some playing time?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, Margus Hunt is a very interesting player, and I will take your word since you've had the opportunity to see him in person about what he's been capable of. And we've seen him a little bit in terms of video when it comes to him. Mm-hmm. I think that he has played out of his natural position since he joined the NFL. I don't think that he belonged in what the Cincinnati Bengals were trying to do with him, and I think that Bengals fans would also acknowledge that.
I've heard a lot of that, too. I don't know that firsthand, but I've heard a lot of that, too.
Yeah, so it's giving him a chance to maybe do the thing that he was meant to do if he was ever going to be able to carve out an NFL career. So it's certainly a storyline that's interesting to watch. Kendall Langford, it really comes down to, and what we don't know and won't know, is, you know, his health concerns. Are they really just being cautious right now with every intention of putting him back into that rotation? If he's the Langford of 2 years ago, then he's a no-brainer. Like, mm-hmm. I would be shocked that Margus Hunt has a chance of beating out Kendall Langford if that's the spot that we're looking at.
Right.
If there's questions about his long-term health, though, I absolutely could see him moving on. They've already done that a lot this year. There's just questions and marks about age and question marks about health. Ballard is not going to sit around and waste roster spots in situations like that. And if he is healthy, he's one of those guys, and I know that we've talked about this. I don't want to go into it too much because I know we're talking about the depth chart today, but there's some opportunities here for some players, especially on the defensive line, that I'd love to see if they could get something for him. You know, whether it be like a length, or do you get a, I don't care if it's a sixth or fifth round pick or something. Can I get, does he have that value? Something, you know, sort of background, but you pick up a draft pick for something like that if he's not 100% ready to go. And he offers someone else, another team who's looking for veteran defensive line help, you know, even if he needs a couple games to get up to speed, something that maybe the Colts don't need right away.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thought process, but, you know, but it's hard to tell. What are they, like you said, what are they going to get for him? We don't know, but at the same time, you just wonder, you know, now's the time to start shuffling if you feel like the need, you know. Moving over to nose tackle, this is one that's got me hot just thinking about it and driving me nuts. Al Woods, obviously the starter, definitely deserves it. Definitely far more everything than any of us expected that I saw. He and Jonathan Hankins have been working phenomenally together. Great chemistry already. His backup right now is David Perry, who has only had, man, what? I don't know if he's been on the field yet. I mean, I know that he was not there at all last week. He was there, not on the field. I know he dressed at Warren Central, but I don't actually think he practiced. I cannot remember. And I don't know if he has after that at all. I don't know if I've heard anything said about him at all, so I don't actually know. But let me tell you something. He is not the backup. I don't care what this stupid thing says. Grover Stewart is definitely earned his spot. All for Grover Stewart taking that backup role. All for it. Because Grover Stewart has earned it. That dude has been playing out of his mind. Quick, strong, I mean, intelligent, always has his eyes in the backfield. That's what's so good about Hankins and Woods, these guys. They work so special together because, A, they just work well together as far as being able to feed off of each other. But Grover Stewart's a similar way, and I think that T.Y. McGill's also been catching on to this as well about looking into the backfield a little bit better when you're engaged. And, you know, these guys are doing it, man. And he is just – I'm just telling you right now, there is no chance that David Perry – is the backup there. I just don't see how he is right now. I mean, the dude hasn't done anything already in practice. How the heck are you going to already have him as a backup? That just makes no sense to me. I don't understand it. But that one, quite annoying even seeing that written down, to be quite honest with you. Any thoughts on your part on that?
It's a last year starter rule. I wouldn't get too upset, Matt. He's last year starter. That's what that's all about, and that's where he is. I'm excited to see Grover Stewart. I've heard you have very big things to say about him, and I've also heard it from others out of camp that he's way ahead of where he should be, and I think way ahead of where anyone would have expected him to be, coming from the level of competition he was coming from. He had the label of, you know, potential, you know, bust, even, you know, is a project player, you know, right. The guy may never pan out, a high ceiling but super low floor type of guy,
right?
So, you know, it's a risk pick, but everything I've heard, I guess I'll ask you this: do you think by the end of the season he takes over the starting nose tackle for Al Woods?
No, I don't think so, because Al Woods is, he's a bigger guy, and Al Woods isn't meant, I mean, you can get quickness and speed out of a nose tackle, but I don't think that they're necessarily looking for that. They want a guy right now. Al Woods is the guy who you see walk into the biker bar and the bikers walk up to the guy and tell him, you know, get your butt out of here, we're gonna roll you. And Al Woods grabs both of the bikers confronting him by the neck. That's what he does at the line of scrimmage. He is taking on two guys immediately right away, and he controls them and does basically what he wants to do. And that, to me, is extremely special because we've never had that. Then you watch him when he puts a pass rush move on, it's capable. He actually is doing well in that role, and that, to me, gets me excited because we haven't had a guy that could do both. Now we've got him and Stewart, and, you know, a guy obviously that we know can do it as well is Jonathan Hankins. Those three guys, watching them in camp, I'm going, these guys are all three nose tackles? Is this for real right now? We haven't had a nose tackle in years who could do anything, and these guys can do basically all of it. I don't know how good Grover Stewart is against the run. I'm not going to pretend that I watched him a ton in that regard, because I didn't. I was watching his pass rush drills, and it just got overly excited. But Woods, Hankins, those guys are, I mean, they're veterans, man, and they know what's going on, and they're doing it, and they're doing it well. But I don't think he takes over the starting spot, no. But I think that there's, I mean, there, I tell you what, there is one mean-looking sub-package up on that front line at some point this year, and we're just going to be like, you know, our hands are going to be on our cheeks. We're going to be so excited to see the snap of the ball, because I think that legitimately, even this Sunday, we're going to see a lot of excitement out of the fan base watching some of these young guys, some of the new guys actually play. This is a different year for the preseason, as far as I'm concerned, watching some of them. It's going to be fun. People are going to be able to see it for the first time, for the most part, because, you know, the fans aren't really being, you know, allowed in camp other than the two open practices they have already had. So seeing this this preseason is going to be exciting, I think. I think Colts fans are legitimately going to enjoy watching a good portion of the preseason. Now, game four, nobody wants to watch that crap. But as far as 1, 2, and 3, it's going to be exciting, I think, even for preseason, just to see what these guys are doing, to see are the reports I'm getting out of camp, are they actually for real? And people are going to see that. I'm pretty sure that they're going to think that it's for real, too.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And, you know, the other thing I guess I would think of when you look at that defensive tackle spot, they're, you know, going to the next spot on the defensive line. You got Hankins, followed by Ridgeway, then T.Y. McGill, and then followed with Josh Boyd. It seems like that makes a lot of sense in terms of where it is, in terms of the actual list and where they are. Mm-hmm. My only question would be, and it's sort of a strange thing, McGill to me, and we've talked about these guys again more than once, McGill to me, does he not strike you more as like a five-tech defensive end, pass rush first type player? I mean, he's always been a guy that gets after it. I know he's big, but I don't even know if he's big compared to some of the guys anymore. What's your thought there?
He's not tall wise, length wise.
Yeah.
But he's kind of, I mean, he's like more of a I don't even know. He's just more compact. I think he's a perfect spot there at the three tech, just because he's not real tall, but he's wide and strong enough to handle anything you can throw at him. And I think that's what makes him special. I don't want to say special, you know what I mean? Special as a backup there. He's a guy who can he can still do it. I'm a little surprised to see Ridgeway, just because he's been limited up until the past few days, to see that he's actually the backup right now. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I love Ridgeway, but I'm a little surprised to actually see him as the backup. T.Y. McGill has had an excellent camp. Now, when you get back to the thought that you were talking about guys possibly getting, you know, on the trade block, that, you know, T.Y. McGill offers some interesting possibilities for a team to get some sort of a possible late round draft pick or a conditional pick or something like that, possibly, because they can't keep all these guys. I mean, they just can't, you know, and so they're going to have to, you're not going to want to just waive somebody if you can get something for him, even something small, you know, so.
Sure. Well, I mean, I'd put you on the spot then, Matt. You've had a good chance to take a look at these defensive linemen, and for you, I know that they've got you pretty excited. I guess it's early. You know, we haven't had the first preseason game yet, but we're a week into training camp, so why not? How many are they going to keep, and who gets cut?
How many do they keep? I am going to say that they probably are going. I mean, I am on the spot here a little bit, but I'm so conflicted by this because I want to see McGill make the roster. You know what I'm saying? I really do, because I love the way he's come on. But honestly, when it comes down to it, I think that they end up keeping 7 total. I think Hankins, Woods, Stewart, and McGill are all there because they're 3-tech hybrids with 0-tech possibility. Hassan Ridgeway for sure. And then Henry Anderson and Langford. And then Marcus Hunt is the first guy out, as far as I'm concerned. That's who, what I've got right now for that group. And I mean, that's, you know, even that's keeping 27 on defense from my vantage point. And that's, you know, there's so many other defensive positions here, but you know, one of the things that we have to look out for, well, we're going to get to that in just a minute, but there's some other interesting things to look out for as far as I'm concerned on this defense, that I think that they're going to want to keep extra guys up front, because that's naturally a position where guys get hurt, you know, injured more. I think that they keep seven. I think that's a pretty, that might be a little high, but I that's what I've got right now.
So you have Perry and Hunt as the two that are out.
Yeah.
Perry, out of that group.
Perry's out for sure. Josh Boyd's out for sure. And Margus Hunt's my first guy in if something happens with Langford.
Okay.
Most definitely. So, let's take a look at the linebackers. Okay, we got the strong side linebacker is John Simon. His backup is Akeem Ayers, somebody that we liked last year, coming in, doing some dirty work. He was actually one of the most efficient pass rushers on the team last year. Barkevious Mingo and Garrett Sickles behind those two. Now, one of the things that I want people to think about, you know, I think that George Bremer was on here several weeks ago, or a couple weeks ago anyways, and he was kind of saying, you know, and this is something that we've reiterated before in the past, pay attention to the people that they talk about when they're not prompted. Garrett Sickles got a couple comments out of Chuck Pagano the other day. Brought him in. He was basically what they were doing was talking about how Robert Mathis has helped the team, you know, coming in as a volunteer rush linebacking coach. And you heard him say something about, you know, Sheard and Basham, you know, talking about those guys being pass rushers. And then he mentioned Garrett Sickles, who's actually at the strong side linebacker right now. And that was interesting to me that he says, you know, even a guy like Sickles is, you know, getting great work done, you know, which just kind of made you think, huh, why'd he mention him? You know, nobody said anything about Garrett Sickles, but Sickles impressed me one practice last week and then, you know, then kind of leveled out a little bit. I won't say fell off. He leveled out a little bit, but that's an interesting group to me. This whole, both sides of this linebacking, because, I mean, we'll do both sides right now, and then we'll go to the inside linebackers next. But you look at Sheard, Basham, those guys are absolutely on the roster, 100%. So are Simon and Ayers as of right now. Who's the guy that they keep behind them, you know, between Barkevious Mingo, Garrett Sickles, LeVar Edwards, Deontrez Mount? Behind the, out of those four, who do they keep that can do both rush and set the edge the best? You know, that is going to be the camp right there as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think Sickles has a real chance. I do think that he also is a prime practice squad candidate, because I don't think he's someone who's going to get snatched away right away.
Right.
I could be wrong on that, but I think that he's enough of a project, and he came out early enough that he's going to maybe cause some other NFL teams to balk just a little bit. But nonetheless, the other competition there in terms of Mingo and Edwards and Mount, those names don't really – those are not insurmountable competition. I mean, it certainly is. And I think for me, you know, if looking at a depth chart, I think they probably keep five.
Yeah.
You know, I do. And if they do, then that's a real opportunity. Now, I have heard some positive things about Mingo. I don't know if those – things were a little bit forced or a little bit he was in the right place at the right time, although sometimes that's the best ability. But, you know, I have heard some things there. So that might be his primary competition. But I think Sickles actually had a great deal of talent for his age. And if he had waited a year or two before he came out, I think he could have been a much higher pick. And I think that that's why they brought him in. And so he certainly has an opportunity. I have no qualms at all with the concept that Sickles will be the last guy, especially if they're wanting to build something for the future at that position.
Yeah, and practice squad would be perfect. The one thing you hope is that nobody gets the inside piece on him and tries to steal him up off of the practice squad. you know, strangely enough, Deontrez Mount has had a fantastic camp from what I saw. I don't know what he's done the past few days, but he looked really, really good. I mean, I was really impressed with him just being good. You know what I mean? LeVar Edwards is a big, strong dude. I'm surprised that they have him as the rush backer, although I know that he has some of that pass rush ability. I just saw him as more of a strong side guy. I just was a little surprised by that. But That I think Mingo, Sickles, Edwards, and Mount, that's going to be a good training camp battle to watch. So let's move into the inside linebackers. Morrison and Bostic are the ones. Anthony Walker, Edwin Jackson are the twos. And then we got Luke Rhodes, Jeremiah George, and Sean Spence all the way in the back. That's really, I mean, it's strange to me, but Sean Spence hasn't popped at practice. I just know what I saw last year on tape and thought he was pretty good. Maybe he's just not impressing. I don't know what the deal is, you know, but Morrison and Bostic are definitely the two that are in there in the base package. Edwin Jackson comes in the first team nickel, and then Walker's basically second team all the way around as well. But they really like Luke Rhodes. They think that he, you know, obviously has an opportunity to be a long snapper as well and save a roster spot as maybe a fifth guy in the middle. Jeremiah George is a pretty big dude. He's a pretty big dude for an inside linebacker, I thought. I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily go on too long about how good I thought he was, but for him to actually be ahead of Sean Spence on this depth chart, that I don't know if that's a message being sent or if he's actually been that good.
Yeah, I think the Sean Spence sort of smells of a message being sent. I think that he has to be in a position to where he has an edge even on Rhodes. And that's not to say that Rhodes doesn't offer the ability to take a roster spot, especially with, like you said, sort of the special teams ability that he potentially can bring. But I think that Sean Spence also is a player. Now, I could be wrong about this, but he's going to be a very interesting player and one I'm going to have an eye on in the preseason games. And the reason for that is because he's a guy who, if there's anybody who deserves a little bit of leeway for being, I guess, gun-shy about getting hurt, you know, in training camp or just taking care of his body, maybe during reps that aren't as meaningful, whether it's perceived or not to him, he's a guy who could be that. So if he comes in and the lights come on and it's a preseason game and all of a sudden he looks like a force out there, and that's a complete opposite of what we saw in training camp, you know, that could be something. But he's definitely not put himself in a desirable situation. And the coaches have definitely let him know, we're not going to just let you make this roster just because we brought you in. Which yeah. Ballard's been preaching that from day one.
Yeah, and we're seeing that with this depth chart. That David Perry just doesn't make any sense to me, but I understand the Sean Spence part. He's actually been there every day, so have the other guys, and this is where they've got him right now. So, I mean, you know, so be it. But Antonio Morrison looks great. Anthony Walker, I wouldn't say that I'm impressed with him, but he's done better than I expected him to do as a rook. Edwin Jackson still holding down that number two spot. Bostic is the guy opposite Morrison there in the base. And Bostic, you know, I'm hoping that none of the talk that, you know, not only people that cover the team, but people who just watch the team and have watched football, they talk about him. Made of glass, great practice guy, lights turn off when he goes onto the field for the game. I just hope that isn't the case this year. The dude's got a lot to prove. He seems like a fantastic guy, and he really wants to be, you know, a force on this team as an inside linebacker. And that's, I mean, you could see it in his eyes when he's talking to you that, like, no, this is it, man. This is the year where everybody who's doubting me is getting the real me, and they're going to love it. And I hope that that's the case this year because he offers a lot if he's healthy, for sure.
Yeah, and I think Edwin Jackson is going to be an interesting story as well behind him because he's a player who I thought had a great deal of ability, especially from a speed perspective. And, you know, you look at the leaps and bounds, it sounds as though Antonio Morrison has made, which, you know, not to gloat or anything, but I sort of called that in my story earlier this year. But anyway, you look at the leaps and bounds that Morrison has made, and you wonder if Jackson's maybe done a little bit of the same. And if he has, I just thought that from a raw athletic ability, last year he looked like he could be a stud. And I don't know that, you know, we've not heard that's what he looks like out of camp. But it's still something, I guess, to sort of keep in mind is he's another player that should be developing in his second year.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that we'll see him do that as well. The fact they've got him in there shows they've got a specific role for him. So Let's run over to the secondary now. Vontae Davis at right corner, Rashawn Melvin at left. Daryl Morris is your slot corner. And, you know, after that, it gets kind of a mixy here. Tevin Mitchell and Quincy Wilson at two and three at left corner. That's not how they've been practicing. So that must be something unrelated. I don't know. But one thing that I do know here is that they've got Tyvis Powell as the number five corner. Watch out for Tyvis Powell. We've talked about him with George. You've heard me talk about him before that. Tyvis Powell's a very interesting guy who's going to get a lot of work in the secondary, and it's not always going to be at corner. He's actually a safety, but they're going to work him at corner. They got Nate Hairston and Dante Blackman behind Daryl Morris and Vontae. This is a fun cornerback class to watch here. But Quincy Wilson is absolutely the number two behind Rashawn Melvin at left corner. I mean, this is written the way it's written. That's fine. My guess is that Tevin Mitchell is the number two slot corner. I mean, that's the only explanation I've got, because he is definitely not the number two left corner.
Yeah, this is an interesting corner group. So I think last year we started to see a little bit of signs of maybe having better depth position than people really gave us credit for as a team. Mm-hmm. I know that we have been missing that elusive, you know, second stud corner across from Davis, and that's something that's really important in Pagano's scheme and the defense that the team looks to play. But I think Melvin is certainly much better than what anyone wants to give him credit for. Mm-hmm. I'm not nervous at all about him playing. Morris, I'm very happy with. I think Wilson has a great deal of potential. You know, I've heard everything you've said about Powell, and so that's sort of exciting. I think Tevin Mitchell was a player that was a sneaky move last year, when we sort of stole him. And so I think that I'm interested to see what he does in preseason. And obviously you have Hairston. I've heard some good things about Blackman as well. So this is an opportunity that I don't know about what exactly we're going to have at, you know, 1A, 1B, because you have a rookie that's playing there and Melvin might be 1C. But I think that it's really encouraging that there's going to be a lot of competition. You talk about a position with competition. I don't think that there's very many spots on the roster other than maybe defensive tackle that might have more at the back end of that roster of competition to see where it turns out.
Absolutely. I don't even need to expound on that because you hit it on the head. Let's move over to the safeties then. Darius Butler at free, Matthias Fairley at strong, TJ behind Farley, and then Andrew Williamson and Tyson Graham, obviously. Clayton Gethers with the asterisk. Malik Hooker behind Darius Butler right now. Lee Hightower behind him. This is, you know, kind of something that really just doesn't matter, because the thing we need to understand is TJ Green is not the number two, you know, right now. Obviously, he's the number three because Matthias Farley is actually the number two behind Clayton Gethers. Whenever that is worked out, it's going to be after week six. So right now, TJ Green's the backup. So Malik Hooker, though, he's actually the number two when you look at safety play all the way in the back end. Butler and Matthias Farley and Malik Hooker, you're going to see all three of those guys on the field a lot. TJ Green is going to get very few snaps, and if Clayton Gethers comes back this year, he's going to get even fewer, because he's done nothing to impress anybody that I've seen. But they've still got him there as the current backup. I'm a little surprised at that. I just think that other guys like Graham and Williamson, and even Hightower for that matter, have actually done something at safety. They've tipped balls. They've had interceptions. TJ Green's had none of that I've seen. So I'm a little surprised that they've even got him there. So it'll be an interesting safety group. This is fun, though, because like we said, we know Hooker's going to be starting in week one. He's not right now, which means nothing, but I'm anxious to see what this depth chart looks like here in a few weeks.
Absolutely, and like you said, Tyvis Powell is listed as a corner, but I think that he's somebody who is in that competition with Hightower and Green. Probably if there's a fifth safety that's kept, especially in sort of a special teams role, that seems to make a lot of sense to me, that you're going to see those three really duking it out. And you got to keep in mind, what's going to happen here is that Gathers is out or will be out for the first 6 weeks. And so because of that, someone's going to make the team that may not be there week seven. Mm-hmm. So it certainly opens up a spot in that role. And what's going to happen is Balor's going to determine whether or not he wants to carry somebody who has maybe a little bit more of a hybrid nature to him. Like if he thinks that can happen with Powell, can play corner and safety, or if he wants someone to play a more specific role in the safety rotation.
Yep, absolutely. This defense is going to be a lot of fun to figure out, to see what happens, to see who stays, who goes. The offense kind of seems fairly easy to pick right now. Yeah. I mean, it just really does. I mean, there's a couple guys, on that depth chart there that we don't really know where everybody's at, and just a few of them. But you look at this defense, and man, you've got, 15 guys to 20 guys in the backup role or in the 2 and 3 and 4 role, where a lot can change and all that stuff here in just a few short days. I am really honestly looking forward to this weekend's game. I know it's preseason. I know it's going to be a lot of vanilla football, but what we are going to see is football. And I cannot wait to talk about what I watched with football. I want to see Colts playing football, like for real, like somebody throwing a pass and other teams like smashing heads to get the football. I am excited for this. We're going to soon be actually on this podcast talking about football, and I can't wait. I cannot wait, man.
I'm really excited about it too. It's going to be a good preseason, a lot of change, and with a lot of change is a lot of excitement. This is going to be something different, turning a page a little bit for the Colts, and it's all about to get started.
Absolutely, dude, thanks for coming on, man. This was a good time. We didn't get a chance to talk about this at all today, so it was kind of fun to just sit here and buzz through it real quick, kind of organically, and as we see it, talk about it. So like I said, we didn't get to talk too much about it, or in fact at all about it, really, just that it came out earlier. So it was fun to have you on, man. Fun to get your insights on these guys, and fun to offer mine as well. But thanks for jumping on, brother.
Hey, man, I always appreciate it. I look forward to the next time.
Absolutely. Thank you guys all for listening. We appreciate it. Definitely make sure you guys are getting to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever you want to call it this week, and get us a rating and review on there. Those are super important. Also, retweet the show. Share the show. Share it like I told you guys the other day. Grandma loves the Colts. Share it with Grandma. Let her listen to it. Get it around to as many people as you possibly can. Also, if you guys want to call in, okay, that's also an option. 574-516-2881. Call in, leave a message. I'll put it on the show, and I'll answer your question as you say it. So thank you, guys. We'll talk to you all later on in the week right here on the Colts Cast.